morning, everyone. Thank you for that singing, and thank you, Andy, for those thoughts. Definitely a challenge to my life. What am I here for? What am I planning for? I appreciate what you said there, that while there's a lot of things we know that we should do, there's even more things that we know that we can do. So thank you for that. What I have this morning, just something I've been pondering in my own life, is God's deliverance. And kind of what I mean by that is deliverance from any challenging circumstances that we may encounter in our life. It may be physical, spiritual, or emotional, real or presumed. A few questions that I had to ask myself is, what does God's deliverance look like? What triggers God's intervention in our behalf in challenging circumstances? How do we know if God is intervening in a situation, and how should we respond? Are we doing anything that hinders God from granting us deliverance? And should we ask God for deliverance? Can we trust His deliverance? And how do we put ourselves in a position to receive it? We're going to try to look at some of these things, and I'd like to do that in Psalms, so we're going to primarily be looking at Psalms 3 and Psalms 18. So we'll start off by reading Psalms 3, 1 through 8. Says, Lord, how are they that are increased that trouble me? Many are they that rise up against me. Many there be which say of my soul, there is no help for him in God, Selah. But thou, O Lord, art a shield for me, my glory and the lifter of mine head. I cried unto the Lord with my voice, and he heard me out of his holy hill, Selah. I laid me down and slept. I awaked, for the Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people that gather themselves against me round about. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for thou hast smitten all mine enemies upon the cheekbone, and thou hast broken the teeth of the ungodly. Salvation belongeth to the Lord, thy blessing is upon thy people. Selah. David wrote this psalm while fleeing from his own son Absalom in 2 Samuel 17. If you read the chapters leading up to Absalom's revolt, things were looking pretty bleak for David's kingdom. His family was in shambles. Betrayal, fornication, vandalism, murder, and rebellion had taken place. 2 Samuel 15:7, 4 through 7 says that for 40 years Absalom was stealing the hearts of the people. I'll just go ahead and read that. Second Samuel 15, 4 through 7. Absalom said, moreover, O that I were made judge in the land, and that every man which hath any sweet or cause might come upon me, unto me, and I would do him justice. And it was so that when any man came nigh to him to do him obeisance, he put forth his hand and took him and kissed him. And on this manner did Absalom to all Israel that came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. Absalom had, in the following verses, Absalom now proclaimed himself king, and it seemed like Israel was in favor of him over David. If you think about the circumstances David was facing at the time of writing this psalm, his faith and trust in God is remarkable. He certainly wasn't out of the woods when he said, salvation belongeth unto the Lord, thy blessing is upon thy people, Selah, verse 8. Obviously, David's past experience with God's deliverance would have helped him have confidence in its reliability, but I also believe that David took an approach to the circumstance that put him in a position to receive that deliverance. So I want to take a look at maybe what the condition of David's heart here during this time of his life. So we'll read Psalm 3, 1 through 3 again. Lord, how are they increased that trouble me? Many are they that rise up against me. Many there be which say of my soul, there is no help for him in God, Selah. But thou, O Lord, art a shield for me, my glory and the lifter of mine head. So first off, he recognizes that there is trouble at hand. It may be easier than we think for us to either turn a blind eye to or misinterpret a trial in our life. Having an unbiased view of reality and a strong understanding of God's word will help us quickly and correctly identify trials of chastisement in our lives. In verse 2, he almost seems to appeal to God's jealous attribute. He says, many there be which say of my soul, there is no help for him in God. He seems like he's almost trying to turn God on here. I don't think we need to be ashamed about doing this, and many times I believe God is waiting for us to do so. Hebrews 4:16 says, let us therefore come boldly under the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace and grace to help in time of need. So we'll look at verses 4 through 6. I cried unto the Lord with my voice, and he heard me out of his holy hill, Selah. I laid me down and slept. I awaked, for the Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people that set themselves against me round about. Immediately, David turns to the Lord for deliverance. Thinking of my own life, I thought, is it possible that we don't receive or are late to receive God's deliverance because we don't or are late to ask for it? The latter part of James 4:2 says, ye have not because ye ask not. If God is not our first source of strength when times are good, it should come as no surprise that God is not our first source of strength when challenging times come. So verses 7 and 8 says, arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for thou hast smitten all mine enemies upon the cheekbones, thou hast broken the teeth of the ungodly. Salvation belongeth unto the Lord, thy blessing is upon thy people, Selah. David directly asked God to deliver him, which goes back to let us therefore come boldly under the throne of grace. If we are going to do this, however, we need to make sure our faith, confidence, and expectations are on the right thing. Are we anticipating God to act in accordance to his will or our will? What God has promised mankind through his word is astounding. One thing that God does not promise us, however, is that his will and his deliverance is going to be exactly what we think it should be, or that the path forward will be easy. So next we'll take a look at Psalms 18. We'll read verses 17 through 29. But here we see the reason. Okay, I'll go ahead and read it first. 17 through 29. He delivered me from my strong enemy and from them which hated me, for they were too strong for me. They prevented me in the days of my calamity, but the Lord was my stay. He brought me forth also into a large place. He delivered me because he delighted in me. The Lord rewarded me according to my righteousness. According to the cleanness of my hands hath he recompensed me. For I have kept the ways of the Lord, and have not wickedly departed from my God. For all his judgments were before me, and I did not put away his statutes before me. I was also upright before him, and kept myself from mine iniquity. Therefore hath the Lord recompensed me according to my righteousness, according to the cleanness of my hands in his eyesight. With the merciful thou wilt show thyself merciful, and with an upright man thou wilt show thyself upright. With the pure thou wilt show thyself pure, and with the froward thou wilt show thyself froward. For thou wilt save the afflicted people, but wilt bring down high looks. For thou wilt light my candle, the Lord my God will enlighten my darkness. For by thee I have run through a troop, and by my God have I leaped over a wall. So in this psalm we see maybe the reason for God's continual deliverance of David from his enemies. As revealed throughout all of the psalms, David's heart was continually turned to the Lord. I would like to take a closer look at some phrases coming from the man after God's own heart in this passage. Verse 17, he delivered me from my strong enemy and from them which hated me, for they were too strong for me. Despite all that he had seemingly accomplished in his life, David never lost sight of the fact that his power was only that from above. Could it be that I sometimes disqualify myself from God's deliverance by believing that I have the strength in myself to overcome? I had to think of when God told Gideon that Israel's army was too big in Judges 7:2. And the Lord said unto Gideon, "The people that are with thee are too strong for me to give the Midianites unto their hands, lest Israel vaunt themselves against me, saying, Mine own hand hath saved me." If we expect to receive deliverance from God, we must understand that He is our only strength, and any strength we have has been given to us by Him. Verse 20 says, "The Lord rewarded me according to my righteousness. According to the cleanness of my hands hath He recompensed me." I didn't look up the word rewarded here in the Greek, but I kind of get the picture that David hardly even expected to receive anything in return for his service to God. He calls it a reward. While we can surely rely on God to deliver on the promises He has given us, I found this to be a challenge to the condition of my heart toward God. Would I be willing to be completely sold out to God and receive nothing in return? Would we be okay if God gave someone who applied half the effort and time that we did into His kingdom as much or more of a reward as us? I found that too many times in my life, I may find comfort in doing more because I hope or expect to receive more in return for it. Consider the parable Jesus gave in Matthew 20. And I'll go ahead and read that parable. It's of the hired servants there. "For the kingdom of heaven is like unto a man that is an householder, which went out early in the morning to hire laborers into his vineyard. And when he had agreed with the laborers for a penny a day, he sent them into his vineyard. And he went out about the third hour and saw others standing idle in the marketplace, and said unto them, Go ye also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right I will give you. And they went their way. Again he went out about the sixth hour and ninth hour and did likewise. And about the 11th hour he went out and found others standing idle, and said unto them, Why stand ye here all the day idle? And they say unto him, Because no man hath hired us. And he said unto them, Go ye also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right, that shall ye receive. So when even was come, the Lord of the vineyard said unto the steward, Call the laborers and give them their hire, beginning from the last unto the first. And when they came that were hired about the 11th hour, they received every man a penny. But when the first came, they supposed that they should have received more, and they likewise received every man a penny. And when they had received it, they murmured against the good man of the house, saying, These last have wrought but 1 hour, and thou hast made them equal unto us, which have borne the burden and the heat of the day. But he answered one of them and said, Friend, I do thee no wrong. Didst thou agree with me for a penny? Take that as thine and go thy way. I will give unto this last even as unto thee." So yeah, that was just a challenge through David's life. It doesn't seem like he would have been able to accomplish what he did with a selfish heart. And it seems like he was always willing to give the reward or the credit to others. That was just a challenge to my own life. If we do indeed feel that we ought to receive more, if we do more, we will be often disappointed, overly protective of what we've done, constantly dissatisfied, and possibly bitter at God and others for the bad hand we've been dealt. This concoction of feelings turns into a rock-hard lump of a heart that God simply cannot work with. So back to Psalms 18. Take a look at I won't read it, but verse 21 on through the rest of the passage has some beautiful promises to those that maintain an intimate relationship with God, as well as a warning to those that choose to keep their distance from Him. David held a close connection with God, even when he wasn't in any kind of distress. There's a quote that comes to mind that I can't quote exactly, but it goes something to the effect of, many people wonder how a man dies or what a man thinks when he dies, but most men die as they live. Challenges and trials in our lives merely take the outer layer of comfort and privacy off of the character we've been building all along. Am I building a character that is committed to displaying all of the fruits of the Spirit and being a representation of Christ to the world, even during trials? It was a challenge to me in thinking of the series that Andy's been going through. Am I dedicated to building a character that displays those fruits, even in challenges? So with these two psalms, what are some things we can draw from these examples of God's deliverance here? One thing that I found, God will not give us deliverance from something that we deny exists. If we deny the circumstance that God has allowed us, we won't be able to accept the deliverance he offers. Becoming bitter or resentful simply isn't an option if we expect to receive deliverance from God. We must continuously connect to God if we expect to receive aid in times of trouble. I'd like to read John 15, 5 through 9. It says, I am the vine, ye are the branches. He that abideth in me, and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. But for without me you can do nothing. If a man abide not in me, he is cast forth as a branch, and is withered. And men gather them, and cast them into the fire, and they are burned. If ye abide in me, and my words abide in you, ye shall ask what ye will, and it shall be done unto you. Herein is my Father glorified, that ye bear much fruit, so shall ye be my disciples. As the Father hath loved me, so have I loved you. Continue ye in my love. So we see here that in order to receive nutrients from the vine, we have to be continually connected to it. And we see here that if we are not connected, there are definitely consequences. We must understand that if we think we can somehow make it on our own, we are definitely not in a place to receive God's deliverance and are, in fact, in danger of his wrath. We also need to understand what we are asking for and what to expect when we ask God for deliverance from a trial or temptation or anything like that. God is working his ultimate plan, and many times this is on a much longer timeline than our modern minds can handle. We're used to, you know, if the food at McDonald's takes more than 5 minutes, we're pretty worked up about that sometimes. Consider Moses, who had to go to school as a shepherd in the wilderness for 40 years before God could use him. This is presumptive, but I could imagine that before Moses submitted to God's school in that wilderness with the sheep, that he prayed for deliverance from his current circumstance. He did receive it, but the question I had to ask is, when did God deliver him from his trial? Was it when Moses left the wilderness, or when he had submitted to God's perfect plan? The deliverance God offers us is perfect harmony and contentment with what God has in store for us, knowing that he has our best interest in mind. Only when we are willing to put our neck in the yoke with Christ and bear the burden he bears can we expect to receive peace and joy in our hearts. I think that it's safe to say that every time David was delivered, he was doing the will of the Lord. The sin with Bathsheba is an example of a time that David stepped outside of what he knew God expected of him, and there was no deliverance to be had from God. Their first son died despite David crying out to God for help. So I had to think, Harry Truman had a quote that said, life is iffy. And I think what he meant by that is almost everything has an if or but in the middle of it. Most of God's promises do. And I think that if we are struggling to find help from God in anything we are facing in our life, it could benefit us to read the terms and conditions that he has for receiving those promises of help. So I think that's all I have. Hopefully it blessed someone. Thank you.